today. It is January 19th, 2017. Today is the last full day of Barack Obama's presidency. This is John Williams, and this is another exciting edition of Mincing Rascals, portions of which will be heard on my Saturday show at 1:30 on WGN Radio.
I'm Steve Bertrand, and I'm in the fetal position.
I'm Kristen McCreary, a member of the Chicago Tribune editorial board.
And I'm Eric Zorn, the beautiful Tribune columnist. Runs Wednesdays, Fridays, and Sundays.
Let's talk a little bit about the last day, then, of Barack Obama's presidency. He's been going not quietly into that good night. He's been making some speeches and doing the rounds, met with the Chicago Cubs the other day. I think he has been gentle in his criticism of Donald Trump and the transition. Eric, what's jumping out at you this past week, then?
Well, certainly the contrast between his demeanor, his style at his news conference on, was it Wednesday, and Trump's demeanor and style at his news conference the previous Wednesday. It jumped out at me a lot. You know, I've been sort of wondering whether he's going to do anything with the Rod Blagojevich appeal for a pardon. I don't think so. But
he liked him on Celebrity Apprentice.
This is Obama. No, Trump might do something, I suppose. You're right.
Oh, that's right. I got the wrong president here, don't I? Yeah.
Don't confuse those two.
How about you, Steve Bertrand? What's noteworthy to you this week?
I don't know. I just thought there was sort of, an awareness that that we're on this American continuum and it's not ending on Friday. There's not one thing ending or necessarily something new beginning. It's a long history. And, you know, as he said during his farewell address Tuesday, keep at the fight, get your clipboard, be engaged. I thought it was interesting how he said that there might be some things that he will speak up on in the future, which is a little out of character with recent past presidents.
Sure.
But hasn't there been something, didn't he form something with another partner to talk about redistricting? It seems to me like that's going to be his venue.
Trump?
No, Barack Obama.
Oh. Barack Obama on his way out, that'll be one of his causes.
Because he talked about, disenfranchisement or voting rights and things, and I just think that's probably where we're going to hear from him, because that can be sort of above the political fray. It might
right,
be
that won't seem as maybe entirely too partisan. I know he did say this week that he wants to stop hearing his voice. He wants to stop talking for a while, and I suppose he means that sort of literally and figuratively, and I don't blame him for that. How about you, Kristen? What's noteworthy to you this week?
I always get a little emotional when there's any sort of a turning of the page. So, I am sorry to see him go. I think the crescendo building up to the election I thought might have fizzled, but it hasn't. I mean, it is still just a very heated environment that Trump is coming into. And it concerns me a little bit that we are so divided and that there's just no room for him. Nobody's willing to even give him a chance, it feels.
Oh,
so I'm concerned about
that. I'm sorry. I disagree. I mean, I think people were willing, maybe if not to give him a chance, to at least dial down the rhetoric. And he is the man singularly who is fueling all of this. I mean, taking on Meryl Streep from the Golden Globes. I mean, he's the guy who's burned up his own sort of honeymoon.
I'm thinking more of the nomination hearings. I've been watching a lot of them, of his cabinet members this week, and the snide remarks and the effort to try to discredit some of these folks who are going before the nomination committee in a way that just has not been done before with other cabinet appointments.
What do you mean?
I thought some of the comments and questions to Betsy DeVos were just snarky and tried to undercut her and make her seem like a housewife who didn't belong in that chair. And there have been some others. I mean, we were trading emails about some of the questions of their investments, and it's a much deeper dive than you saw with somebody like Penny Pritzker, who also was heir to a fortune and was Obama's choice for Commerce Secretary after two previous Commerce Secretaries didn't get support.
But Zoe Baird was torpedoed because she had not paid taxes for a nanny. She wanted to be Attorney General, good or bad. And this guy Price, Congressman Price, is buying drug company stocks and then introducing a week later legislation that will impact them. I think that's pretty serious. It is,
and it's worth it. I'm not saying the question shouldn't be asked. It's just in the context of what the Senate and members of Congress do in their, if they file paperwork, you can look it up. It's public record where all of their investments are. And they get caught all the time doing questionable things, voting on, you know, things that help their stock, or, you know, this wife all of a sudden bought a bunch of. So I'm not saying it's right. I'm just trying to provide some context that I haven't seen other cabinet members get the same sort of scrutiny.
But this was a particularly provocative set of nominees, I think. I mean, you look at like Ben Carson, really, for HUD? I mean, come on.
Rick Perry
for energy. Want
to get rid of it?
Betsy DeVos, and I know, Kristen, you think highly of her, but she is way out there on the fringe. She does not believe, basically, in public education.
That is just not true, Eric. It's just that
she wants to privatize the whole thing.
I'm sure you're reading your Twitter feed that feeds this impression of her. I'm not even saying I think highly of Betsy DeVos. I like that he's choosing people who are outside of the establishment, and she is one of them. She is within the mainstream in terms of what she was pushing in Michigan.
All these people from Goldman Sachs are outside the establishment. I mean, you know, I mean, I feel like down the line he has made a series of very provocative. I won't use the word extreme, but provocative cabinet appointments. I mean, there are not a lot of people. The guy who's in charge of the environment doesn't believe in climate change. I mean, he's suing the EPA.
That's not true, Eric. He said this week during the hearings that he does.
He did say that this week.
Oh, he did. Okay, he's changed his tune.
I'm a little encouraged by what I'm hearing from the hearings.
Oh, you're going to have to wait a minute then.
Go ahead, Steve Bertrand.
Kristen, I kind of agree with you. I mean, I think that these nominees, I think there are real questions about them. I think it's fascinating that you have the nominees for Defense Secretary and Secretary of State testifying that they are diametrically opposed to the stated position of the man they're going to work for. That's amazing to me. But when it all shakes down, they're all going to get approval, and the Democrats are going to ask their pointed questions or snide questions to make their mark. What's kind of remarkable to me is, I think I agree with both of you, Eric, they're incredibly provocative. There are some of them who, you know, their credentials are questionable, especially Perry and Energy. But I think that because there's a much bigger question mark than a cabinet secretary, I mean, that Donald Trump is, that none of these little sorts of fight, there's a much bigger fish in the pan, that all this other stuff is just going to go through. It's just going to go through the motions, and everyone's going to be approved.
I don't know. I mean, Obama didn't get all of his approvals. He tried to nominate Tom Daschle, who in the time that he left the Senate and the time he was nominated for HHS secretary had done some lobbying and was not approved.
Right. So, he was kind of sunk on a tax technicality-ish.
But his driver, wasn't it? He wasn't paying taxes on his driver.
He had a car and
I guess
and a driver.
The point I'm making,
that.
Kristen, is those were sinkable 16 years ago or 8 years ago. And now, and to Trump's credit, he's got the power. He's got the boldness, I could say, to screw it. It doesn't matter. You know, these people are going through anyway, and they are going to go through
anyway.
I think
they haven't been properly. A lot of them have not been vetted, like a Tom Daschle or someone who's been in public service. So I understand the complaints that some of them didn't fill out their ethics forms completely. You know, and actually Daschle withdrew his own name from the nomination process before he got to a vote because of that controversy. But I just think the fact that when it came to Betsy DeVos, you know, yes, she has wealth. Absolutely. No, she doesn't have a lot of experience with Pell Grants. No, her kids didn't have to take out loans to go to college. But kind of putting her on the spot and trying to embarrass her for her wealth, which she has used in a way that a lot of people think is admirable, to try to push an issue she feels very strongly about in her own state. And when she's testifying before members of Congress who themselves went to private school, send their kids to private school,
She was also asked by the Connecticut senator whether or not guns should be allowed in school, and she couldn't say no.
Her first answer was, I agree with, that it should be up to states and local governments, because you can't say what's a local school board in Texas thinks about, you know, concealed carry versus a school in Chicago. But then she made an absolutely asinine comparison
about the
grizzly bear. But she started off okay, but then
you can say it's up to states and local governments, but I think no. You know what I mean?
Well,
you can say both.
Don't. I'm very much in that states and local governments should be in charge of making those kinds of decisions.
I'm saying
that's
you can say
your
both
opinion,
things. You can
Steve.
Say,
I
no,
mean,
no.
You're assuming that that's the right answer. She can be for arming somebody in a school.
Yeah,
that's,
you're right. No, but I think she could have been.
That is a defensible position.
You're right.
But even the question, I mean, some of these questions were meant to put her on the spot. They didn't even let her complete a lot of the questions they asked her. And it was more about letting Tim Kaine and Elizabeth Warren and some of these other people have a little soapbox when they themselves are not supportive. If you consider that they themselves have sent their kids to private school or they went to private school, they're not accessing the public education system, but they want to, you know, flame her.
Well,
for supporting charter schools.
The thing is, though, that it's not who the U.S. Secretary of Education isn't all that important, really. It's all going to be what the Trump administration wants. Can anyone name the current Secretary of Education?
Please be quiet. Arnie's back in town. He doesn't want to hear that.
He's not. I mean, it's not. It's John King. And I had to look it up on my phone because I didn't even know that. I mean, the truth is, I mean, I guess in some ways I would say that a president is entitled to surround himself with a cabinet that he wants and try to push things through. I'm hoping that I see some Republicans getting up on their hind legs and standing up to Trump on something that, you know, I mean, you saw Marco Rubio and John McCain in the Rex Tillerson's Secretary of State hearings, really challenging and really sounding like they might not vote for him. I would like to see them stand up to him because, you know, it is important that you have some check and balance, that you don't have the Senate just going, whatever you want, Mr. Trump.
I think we're going to find out how important these secretary positions are, right? I mean, this whole process, Kristen's right, it's always the other side sniping and using it as a soapbox to either run the person down or espouse their own views. But generally, they get approved, and generally, they then do something. Sometimes it's a figurehead. I'm not sure that Ray LaHood was an expert on transportation, but he was the transportation secretary. And he, you know, there weren't that many highways in Peoria, for crying out loud. I don't know how important that is.
There are more now.
Yeah, I'm sure one named after him. Right.
They've got four airports now and nine train stations. Right.
It's LaHood Airport number one, LaHood Airport number two.
Yeah, but I mean, I guess I'm saying, you know, it's okay. They're going to approve all or nearly all of these nominees, and that's fine with me because that's the election. That's how it works.
You get to pick. Yeah.
But I do want to. I'm looking more for a broader trend. Are they going to stay? Is the Republican majority in the Senate going to stand up to him in some ways on some things?
I think they will. I absolutely do, Eric. I mean, you see this in the nomination process as it is now. Donald Trump has no interest in the one China policy, but don't you think the U.S. Senate and the Congress and maybe some of the people behind him, who he doesn't even know yet, will say, you know, we need to be more measured about this? I see this in a number of things, like his climate, his energy secretary and his interior secretary saying, in fact, we don't think the global warming is a Chinese hoax. And so he said all these crazy things on the campaign trail, but when you put these people under a microscope, they're not as dumb as he sounds sometimes.
But here's the problem, John, and I think I've said this before. I don't know which of the words coming from the administration matter, and I think none of them. I don't think any is definitive. That's my issue. So when you have the president-elect giving an interview overseas saying again that NATO is obsolete.
Yeah, well, he doesn't know what that means.
I don't care, because then you have his proposed Secretary of Defense saying, if we didn't have NATO now, we'd have to create it. Okay, which of those words matter? You know, I mean, what is the U.S.? It's hard to, he's unjudgeable right now because I don't know what to judge him by.
Let's look at his Twitter account, shall we? He is still arguing as we record these. No, this goes back. I'm looking at his Twitter account. And that is where the John Lewis debate sort of really erupted. Oh. Do you guys have a strong opinion about John Lewis's decision not to go to this inauguration?
John Lewis is an American hero and an icon, and every member of Congress should be standing there to see the next president take the oath. Absolutely.
Kristen, are you the same way on that? Should John Lewis and all of them be there?
You know, they have a First Amendment right to not attend, and I fall on the side of, I just think it's kind of rude. And in the same way that I thought it was kind of rude of Ted Cruz, you know, have some manners, have some respect for the office. In the same way that congressman yelled out liar to Obama, which was really, really offensive during one of his addresses, I think it is it's a transfer of power and it's kind of disrespectful to the office. But I also respect their First Amendment right to not go. There were Republicans, a handful of them, maybe 20, who didn't go to Obama's. And they instead went out to California and rented a nice house and they joked about how they were going to sit in the hot tub.
I don't remember that. There were maybe.
Well, of course not, because nobody made a big freaking deal about it.
Including Obama. There's a couple of dozen people, though, who did not go to Obama's inauguration.
Oh, yeah, many. Republicans.
That fact is lost
on me this week. I'll send you the
I'm not arguing you. I'm glad you brought that up. What do you think about all that?
I agree with Steve. I mean, I think that you should go because you're not celebrating Donald Trump. You're celebrating the orderly transition of power. I don't think they should be going to inaugural balls, and I don't think they do. I don't think that the inauguration itself is a celebration of the new – I mean, I know it's portrayed this way, but it is actually it is a national ritual. And it is one of the great things that we do and one of the great things that makes a, you know, a Democratic Republic so wonderful, which is that we make smooth transitions of power. You know, Trump's people don't have to come in and slit the throats of the people in the White House so they can take over.
I mean, so go there and stand witness
to it. So you don't have to clap for his speech? You don't have to
I just got a press release from Senator Dick Durbin. He is going, and that's basically what he says. My presence is an acknowledgement that once again America has achieved what so many nations have failed to do, peacefully transition to new leadership.
Okay, right. So he said it better than I did. But
I give John Lewis a pass, though. It just seems to me so personal to him. And maybe it's grandstanding. I guess this isn't the first time he's done it. But I've sort of been reading a lot about John Lewis this week. I don't know if you guys have been, too. And I go, dang, he really was there. And for Donald Trump to say, you're all talk, talk, and no action, I could see how that would really offend him to his core and him just saying, screw it, I won't show up then.
Well, at this point, with the provocation that Trump threw back at him, yeah, I can see him saying, you know, I'm turning my back on you. But, yeah, I mean, why doesn't Trump learn just to let that stuff go?
On the eve of Martin Luther King Day,
I'm sure
he picks a fight with John Lewis.
I know. Well, John Lewis picked a fight with him by calling him an illegitimate president. But you know what? I like Michelle Obama's advice. When people go low, you go high. And Trump could have just ignored it, said nothing, not picked on
a civil rights
leader. What
do you think he meant by that, Kristen? What did he mean by illegitimate president?
Let's just face it,
NBC, I don't think pushed him enough on what exactly he meant by that.
I mean, from what I read, he was referring to Russian interference, that he doesn't.
Do you think he's saying that they literally rigged the election, the numbers weren't legitimate, and that maybe Hillary in fact won? Or is he just saying what we all know, that emails were released and it made it harder for Hillary to win? If that's the case, that doesn't make him an illegitimate president. It makes him the president.
He's the president. It's a silly argument. He's the legitimate president. And
thank you.
And I mean, John Lewis gets to say what John Lewis says, and you know, it's too bad that this is happening, but he's a legitimate president.
There's a certain kind of diplomacy that you have, especially when you're the incoming president of the United States. You put out a statement saying, I respect John Lewis and all that he's done. I respectfully disagree with him on this point, and I wish him well, or something like that.
You don't say anything.
Can you imagine if Barack Obama or George W. or any previous president had responded to every time he was criticized on TV by an actress or any of that stuff? You don't say it. You just don't.
Or even
you
a Republican
up.
Or a member of Congress who were questioning him all the way. You're right.
What's our thought about the march then, the day after the inauguration? The rallies will number tens of thousands, maybe 50,000, they're now saying, in Chicago. Is that are you guys neutral about that? Are you pro that? Do you wish people wouldn't do that? Is this the same as – is this a sort of version of what John Lewis and Luis Gutierrez and the rest of them are doing, or is this something different?
No. It's a statement of solidarity and purpose. I think I'm all for it. I think it's a great thing. Mary Schmeek has a wonderful column in today's Thursday's Tribune about why it's a good thing to go. I'm generally a little bit leery of protests that don't have a particular – message or an ask, like what is it that they want to have happen? But I think it's just people getting together and saying, look, you know, we're all here, we're all watching, we're all ready to mobilize when issues take place. I think it's a wonderful thing. And as long as it's peaceful, it's terrific.
Are you on board with that, Kristen? I know
sure.
You got to run here, but before you leave us on this podcast, what did you want to say about that?
I agree with Eric. I mean, it's again, to me, what makes this country so unique and special. We will have a transition of power. People can protest as long as it doesn't get ugly and mess up my commute home. I'm fine with it.
So how will the president handle it? That's what will be interesting. You know, because that's one, right? We said just shut
up. They're losers. These people are losers.
Yeah,
they're sad.
Put your Twitter machine away on Saturday.
Right.
Yeah,
can somebody explain why it smells like hamburgers in the studio right now? I'm so hungry.
It's a Christmas cologne I was given.
To smell like Burger King?
It's working.
Ladies, go for it.
It's very attractive,
it's called
Steve.
Portillo.
It's very hot. Yeah.
Steve, I've
made right.
Hey, Kristen, maybe we'll talk about this in your absence. Again, I'm watching the clock for you, but is there anything going on in Springfield that has caught your eye or ear that you want to just lay on us before we wrap it up?
Well, the governor gives his State of the State address next week, which is just kind of a speech. It doesn't come with any policy changes. And you have a little movement in the state Senate where the Democrats and Republicans are trying to work together to come up with some sort of a budget compromise. And that would put pressure on Governor Rauner and House Speaker Michael Madigan to do something. We've just seen stonewalling for the past couple of years. So I'm a little bit hopeful that if they can do it in the Senate, it will put pressure on the House to get a budget for us. I mean, the fact that we still don't have a working document, a working spending plan in the state is just beyond ridiculous, derelict of duty for all of
lawmakers. Is this
lawmakers.
2 years now? Is it 2 years that they've gone without a budget?
Yeah, pretty much.
July 1st, 2015, right?
We have stopgap budget, but even that ran out in December. And the problem is we just keep spending at the levels we've always spent at. So we just keep digging ourselves deeper. This is the story of our state, by not having a spending plan in place that maybe cuts costs and maybe raises taxes or, you know, somehow bring these two ends together.
The governor's people this morning or yesterday put out a statement basically saying that this is $4.3 billion short, that the plan being advanced by Cullerton and Redonio. Nevertheless, when you were in an undisclosed location last week, Kristen, I said that this was a green shoot, that this meeting of the minds between Cullerton and Redonio was a really positive sign. Even though it might not go anywhere, it's at least movement. Do you agree?
I do. The two of them they tend to cooperate, though. The problem is John Cullerton tends to acquiesce to whatever House Speaker Michael Madigan does in the House, even though he runs his own chamber. He is independently elected by his own members. He tends to be, we've talked before about the lack of, you know, balls in Springfield. And a lot of that comes from the Senate president himself. He is not willing to stand up to the Speaker. And so if this is a little indication that he is doing that, it's good. But it could be very short-lived.
Just at the meeting this morning, Kristen put it this way. She said, I want to tell Cullerton to get off Madigan's pant leg.
That was top secret.
Really?
He is. I've described him as
the... That's an image
I'm going to try. Sorry.
No, it's going to be hard to do.
The rest of the day. Yeah. Thank you very
you
little
can't
for that.
I can't you can, unthink that.
There
you
it is
can
again.
Count on me to make your eyes and right. ears bleed at any moment.
Let's wrap it up this way. Our recommendations for the week. Kristen McQuarrie, what are you reading?
So I'm listening to a book on tape that I wondered if Steve is familiar with. It's called A Little Life by Hanya, and I'm going to mess up the last name. But it's long. It's about four young men who go to school together and kind of where their lives end up. But the descriptions are just really beautiful. And as a writer, I'm kind of soaking up all of just the – it's very detailed, and I'm just trying to kind of keep a little library in my head of the way that that the author will describe a night sky, for example. It's just so far so good. A Little Life.
How about that? How about you, Steve Bertrand? What do you like this week?
I'm afraid I might never read another book because I just can't get hooked in one, and TV is so good right now. I'm watching a show called The AO. Has anyone watched that? It's on Netflix, and it's you know, I'm in the midst of it. So remember when Eric brought up Fleabag a few weeks ago, and Fleabag was one of these series that you really didn't know what it was about until it was over in my world.
Yes.
And I think the AO is going to be that too. So I'm halfway through. I'm pretty sure I'm going to recommend it when I'm done. But it's we see this girl, and I think she's a Chicago actress, and she even wrote some of it, an opening, and she's basically jumping off of a bridge. She survives. And she comes then home. Her parents find her. She turns out she's been missing for years. And when she comes home, she can see. When her parents last saw her, when she was quote-unquote abducted, she was blind.
Oh. Mm.
So now we've got to figure out how she gets her vision back and why it is that she was jumping off this bridge. And it's just a bizarre, unusual ride, and I'm really enjoying it. AO.
I hope that this is one of those ones that comes to a satisfying conclusion.
And then ends,
it's
I
not
hope.
Like Twin Peaks, which I guess they're reviving. Twin Peaks, I was obsessed with that. Was it almost 30 years ago, 25 years ago? And then the resolution was so unsatisfying that I'm still mad about it.
What are you liking this week, Eric?
I'm starting to watch Westworld, and I haven't watched enough of it to say that to recommend it. But anyone else watching Westworld?
I watched it.
Yeah,
I wasn't in love with it.
No,
I wasn't either.
My husband is watching. He might be done. Oh, I mean, he loved it. He was like waking up at 5 a.m. to get an episode in before
through.
Work. Yeah.
Wow. But wow. I'm not recommending that. I'm recommending Homecoming. It's a Gimlet Media podcast, 6 episodes. It's another one of these audio dramas. But this one they've got Catherine Keener, who's a double Oscar nominee for Being John Malkovich, and Capote. Jody, David Schwimmer from Friends is in it, David Cross from Arrested Development, Oscar Isaac from Inside Llewyn Davis. They got an all-star cast. It's 6 episodes, Homecoming from Gimlet Media. It's a fun story. It's about a very mysterious Twilight Zone-y kind of thing that they're doing with soldiers coming back from the war.
John Williams?
Young Pope, Jude Law.
Really?
Yeah,
oh,
really?
Oh, my God. It's only 2 episodes in. It's HBO, and I'm telling you what, guys, this thing is... This Pope is such an amazing character. What an SOB he is. It's pretty amazing. Oh, my. It's about a young American Pope, 47 years old. They think they've got one thing, and then they find out they have something completely different. He's vain. He's, by the way, I hate to say this, but it is so true. There's some lines that leap out. If Donald Trump became Pope, it would be like this.
Let me ask you this. Is it respectful?
Of the church, I think it is, because okay. There's this one rogue pope, but all the trappings, all the people around it seem authentic. So I don't think it's making fun of the church. I think it's just telling a bizarre story about a rogue pope. 2 books that are on my nightstand, The Industries of the Future by Alec Ross. It's about computers and bots and software. It's fascinating, The Industries of the Future. And one last one is Lisa Napoli's Ray and Joan about the Crocs, and it's a fascinating story.
Movie out this weekend.
Has anyone
right?
seen that movie yet?
No,
or
not yet.
I have not. It's just about to come out, and I've read nice things about it in advance, and this sort of tells the backstory.
So you know,
it's...
politics is so depressing. We should just do an arts podcast.
Just nobody
talk
else?
About all these books and movies and TV. And yeah.
We should, or maybe we'll do this at least at the front of the podcast before people get angry and then turn it off. But we appreciate your listening to The Mincing Rascals. Kristen McQuarrie writes for the Chicago Tribune, as does Eric Zorn. You can hear Steve Bertrand when he's not in the fetal position on WGN Radio. I'm John Williams, and I will talk to you Saturday at 1. Thank you very much to our engineer, Ben Cortez, today. And our producer today is Craig Collins, working under the tutelage of one Kristen Decker. I'm John Williams. We'll drop another podcast on you next week.
Subscribe to the Mincing Rascals podcast on iTunes or the Google Play Music Store or wherever fine podcasts are downloaded. You can also listen online on the WGN Plus app. The Mincing Rascals podcast is a presentation of the WGN Plus podcast network. You can also catch highlights every Saturday from 1:30 to 2 p.m. on The John Williams Show on WGN Radio.
You little